कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण, वेलकम बैक टू भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर इन द हार्ट ऑफ द भक्ति सेक्शन, नाइन्थ चैप्टर, द मोस्ट कॉन्फिडेंशियल नॉलेज। कृष्ण हैज टॉक्ड अबाउट हिज सुप्रीम पोजिशन विद रिस्पेक्ट टू द मटेरियल वर्ल्ड इन 9.10. And now we will be talking about how different people understand Krishna in different ways. Let's have a quick overview of the chapter before we move ahead. So first was developing Kevala Bhakti by knowledge of Krishna. Then Krishna's inclusive relationship with the material world, what we discussed about. Now those who understand Krishna in various ways. So because Krishna's relationship is inconceivable, it's not easy to understand. And that's why different people understand it differently. So 11 to 12 will talk about the impersonalists who mistake Krishna's body to the material. 13 to 14 will talk about the Kevala Bhaktas. And then 15 will talk about three types of people: Ahangaropasakas, Padikopasanas, and Vishwaropasakas. And 16 to 19 will elaborate on the Vishwaropasakas. Let's discuss about them one by one. So we'll move to verse 11. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto amabhuta maheshwaram. So here Krishna is describing avajananti maam moodha. The foolish people cannot understand me. The Prabhupada translates avajananti as deride. So they deride me. What do they deride? Manushim tanumashritam. See, that actually is descended in the human form. So here the implication of manushim tanum is that they have descended in a form that is just like ours. So that means they say that actually Krishna's form is just like our form. It's a human form, it's a material form, and they do not understand parambhavam ajananto. They do not understand the parambhava, the transcendental nature. What is the transcendental nature? Mama bhuta maheshwaram. And I am the lord of all living, all of existence. Bhuta is everything that is. Bhuta is generic for existence. Maheshwaram. So the word Mahesh is sometimes used to refer to Lord Shiva, but actually it's a generic name. Isha is controller, Mahesh is the great controller. So Maheshwaram is the great controller. So Krishna is telling over here, Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram. He's the great controller of all of existence. So this is a very important verse, which if you look at the context, the previous verse was saying, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. It's under my Adhyakshata. Prakriti is working. And so Krishna can do the same thing over here. Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram. I am the Ishwara of all of existence. Now, the words here have specific and significant meanings. Let's look at them one by one. Avajananti ma mudha. So let's look at avajananti. So there are three ways of approaching. So jananti, ajananti, and avajananti. So when there is jananti, when we know Krishna properly, then that knowledge of Krishna leads to liberation. This was talked about in the famous verse, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yometi tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti sarjuna. Will come back to me. That is supreme liberation. So that is jananti. So knowledge will lead to liberation. Then the opposite of jananti would be ajananti. Those who do not know about Krishna, that is ignorance. Now in one sense, ignorance about Krishna is bad. But actually, in many ways, worse than ignorance can be wrong understanding, misunderstanding. So to know, jananti is to know, ajananti is to not know, avajananti is to know the opposite of what is right. So we see that when Srila Prabhupada was sharing Krishna consciousness in India, most people thought we already know Krishna. And either they had a conception of Krishna as just some cultural, historical figure, maybe he gives a message, but that's not very relevant in our modern progressive times. Or they're impersonalists, so yes, Krishna is a symbol of the absolute truth. Krishna is a, we have to go beyond Krishna to the unborn within Krishna. So this was avajananti. So ajananti and avajananti. So now when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, there people were ajananti, they knew nothing about Krishna. And we saw that they took up Krishna consciousness much more easily. So both are obstacles, ignorance and misunderstanding. But often misunderstanding can be a greater obstacle, especially in terms of conceptual barriers that it creates. Because when there's misunderstanding, I think I already know, and first I have to erase the mental slate and then write fresh on it, which requires more effort. So of course, India, the advantage is the conceptually there was a misunderstanding, but culturally there was agreement. People know about Krishna, people know about deity worship, people know about Krishna's pastimes, and if they want to devote themselves to Krishna, it is relatively easier for them. So in the West, conceptually also it was difficult, but because they did not have any preconceptions, misconceptions, so they accepted what Prabhupada taught. For them culturally it was difficult because their culture was so radically tamasic at that time. So avajananti. Now what happens when there is avajananti, misunderstanding, that there leads to continued material existence, and then there is increased bondage. So because of the misunderstanding we can commit offences, and those offences can lead to suffering. So what is this verse saying? Prabhupada's purport is quite elaborate to this verse. Manushim tanum ashritam. Manushim tanum. One who takes shelter of the human body, that the idea that actually the absolute truth has come in our mortal, material, human body, people don't understand. Param bhavam ajananto. So actually Krishna has used two words here. Krishna has used the word ajananto and avajananti. Both he has used. So what is the significance of that? He says that actually they misunderstand me, avajananti mam, and ajananto param bhavam, and they do not know the transcendental nature. What is the transcendental nature? That actually God can be a person. That the absolute truth can have a form and still be unlimited. How is that possible? That's the inconceivable power of God. He can have a form that fits in the lap of Mother Yashoda, but when he opens the mouth, within that the whole universe is seen. So it's param bhavam ajananto. They do not know my transcendental nature. So the problem of the impersonalists is that they extrapolate from their limited material experience and they think matter means limitation, matter means imperfection, matter means entanglement, and they extrapolate that, and that must apply to everything. Now this is true for everything material. But they equate material with form. They think that the form causes entanglement, the form causes bondage, the form is limited, therefore everything with form must be limited. So everything with matter is limited, that is true. But everything with form doesn't have to necessarily be limited, because spirit has the potential to be unlimited. So now Prabhupada correlates immediately from the Brahma Samhita in the purport. This is that Ishvara Paramakrishna. So here the word used is Maheshwara. So Prabhupada twice he quotes this. Ishvara Paramakrishna is here, and again in the next line, Ishvara Paramakrishna. And then again, actually, third time Prabhupada is quoting the same verse here, Sachidananda Vigraha. Sachidananda was quoted here also. So the emphasis is on establishing that Krishna has a form. And Prabhupada even quotes from the Gopala Tapani Upanishad, Sachidananda Rupaya Krishnaya. So Krishna has a form which is Sachidananda Rupaya. It's a very explicit word. Very little doubt about it. And then again, this is 1.1. Right in the beginning, the invocation of the Gopal Dapani Upanishad says this. And then, Tam Ekam Govindam Sachidananda Vigraham. This is 1.35 in the Gopal Dapani Upanishad. So you are Tam Ekam Govindam. You are the one. There's no one like you. And you are having Sachidananda Vigraham. You are having transcendental form. Now, the Gopal Dapani Upanishad, as we have discussed earlier briefly, is one of the Upanishads in the 100 Upanishads, and it glorifies Lord Gopal and establishes his divinity and supremacy. Now, beyond that, let's look at what other things Prabhupada says. Now, Prabhupada uses the word symbol over here, which may seem a little disturbing for some people. They do not know that Krishna's body is a symbol of complete knowledge and bliss, that he is the proprietor of everything that be, and that he can award liberation to anyone. So what do you mean by how is Krishna's body a symbol? Now we say Krishna's body is the ultimate reality. So What do we mean? That is a symbol of complete knowledge and bliss. So, basically what it means is Sachidananda Vigraha. Krishna's body is non-different from him. And Sachidananda Vigraha. So, the word symbol is used in the sense that the impersonalists have a conception that knowledge and bliss has to be impersonal. But, actually, knowledge and bliss are manifested in a concentrated personal form. Just like, you know, we may have on a cake some cream coating. The cream normally is diffused. Now when the cream is diffused, it's spread all over the top of the cake. Now we can take it out and we can actually make a figure. You know, maybe we can make a mouse, we can make a rabbit, we can make a dog, we can make an elephant. Some child's birthday is there, we can make a form which is just like that form only. Of child's form. Similarly, we can make a child with the cream. Now actually, normally cream is diffused, but here, when we talk about the toy that is made with a cream, all of it is cream only. So like that, Krishna, the absolute truth is diffused everywhere as the Brahman, all-pervading Brahman, but that absolute truth is concentrated in the form which is entirely Sachidananda. So, in that sense, the absolute truth is manifested in a personal form. And so, what the impersonal think of is, bliss and knowledge has to be all-pervading. It has to be diffused. Well, it can be diffused, it can be concentrated also. So, Krishna's body is just like a toy made of cream. It's fully cream only. So, like that, Krishna's body is fully transcendental. It's fully Sachidananda. So, that is the transit, this is Prabhupada's expression of Param Bhavam Ajananto. And then Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavatam now. He quotes this verse from the inquiries of Shaunak Rishi. So, Krittavana Kil Karmani Saharamena Keshava Atimartyani Bhagavan Gudha Kapatamana Shaha. So, Krittavana kila karmani, perform many amazing activities. Saha Ramena Keshavaha. So, Rama refers here to Balramji and Keshava is Lord Krishna. So, along with Balramji, Keshava performed many pastimes. And Atimartyani Bhagavan. So, Bhagavan, this is the Supreme Lord, is all attracted to Supreme Person. Atimartyani. He is actually situated beyond the situation of the Martyani, of those who are destined for death, all ordinary beings. But how do you perform these activities? Gudha kapatamanushaha. So, gudha. It is confidential, it is secret. Kapatamanushaha. It appeared as if he was actually concealing, he was deluding, he was bewildering. This is 1120. And then Prabhupada quotes also from the Bhagavatam. Babhuva Prakrita Shishu. So Babhuva means became. Prakrita Shishu. So that absolute truth who had manifested as the four-handed Vishnu in the prison chamber of Devaki and Vasudev. There what did he do? That absolute truth. Babhuva Prakrita Shishu became Prakrita Shishu. Became a child. It seemed to be just like an ordinary tender child. And then, in the 11th chapter also we'll see that what does that this same Krishna who is the chariot of Arjuna do? He will become Tenaiva Rupena Chaturbhujena. He manifests Chaturbhuja form. We'll discuss when we come to the 11th chapter. And here also, then he manifests with the Chaturbhuja Rupa. Manifest the Virat Rupa, manifest Chaturbhuja Rupa, and then after that what happened? Manusham Rupam. He manifested a human-like form. So now, what exactly is the objection? If we say Krishna himself used again assumed his original human-like form. So Manusham Rupam, if the word is used Manusham Rupam, so what is the problem? See, the problem here is not the word Manusham. It is Manusham Avjanantima Moodha Manushim Tanum Ashritam. So Ashritam. So the idea is that when we take shelter of something, that something is different from us. So if it's raining, I may find a tree and take shelter of the tree. If I'm poverty stricken, I may take shelter of a wealthy person. So generally, that which gives shelter and that which takes shelter, the two are different. So the idea here is that the absolute truth is impersonal, the absolute truth has taken shelter of a material form, of a human-like material form. That is the notion of the impersonalists. But here Krishna is telling, or rather the Bhagavad Gita is telling, that actually this is the form which he eternally has. He doesn't have to take shelter of this form. So all the verses that have been quoted are quoted to point out that this form is not something which is taken ashray of. This form is eternally the form that he has. Sachidananda Vigraha. Krishnaya Rupaya. Sachidananda Rupaya. This is what we quote, look at from the Brahma Samhita and the Gopaldapani Upanishad. And now, Prabhupada goes into a Bhagavatam reference, which seems to support impersonalism, and he counters the Mayavadi interpretation of that. This is 329-21 from the Kapila section. Aham sarveshu bhuteshu bhutatma vastita sata. So, aham sarveshu bhuteshu. I am situated in all living entities. Sarveshu bhuteshu bhutatma vastita sata. I am situated in all living beings. When he says this, so Prabhupada says that we look at the explanation of this given by Chakravarti Pad and Jiva Goswami. And he gives this explanation that actually the Lord is present as the living entity, the Lord is present with the living entity as the super soul. And the transcendental super soul is internally present, manifests externally as the Archa Vigra. And the point is, what is the context of this verse? Well, it is said that actually the Lord is in the heart of all living beings. Now, one should respect all people also. One shouldn't think that, oh, I just worship the deity in the temple, that is a Kanishta platform, and I'll not care for devotees. No, I definitely need to worship the deity in the temple, but along with that, I also need to respect the devotees. And because not just the devotees, all living beings, because the Lord is present in the heart of all living beings. The context of this verse is not to say that the absolute is impersonal, diffused in the heart of all living beings. No, there is a person, and that person's presence becomes accessible to us as the deity, but that doesn't mean that we stay unconscious to that person's presence everywhere else. Supreme Person is present in also the heart of all living beings, and that absolute truth should also be worshipped over there. So Prabhupada, Avijananti Maam Moodha, he takes it in two ways here. One is that they deride the personal form of the Lord, and second is that they deride the form of the deity, which is also an object of worship. Now Krishna next will describe those who do this kind of avjananti, those who deride him, what happens to them. That describes in the next verse. Moghasha mogha karmano mogha jnana vicheta saham rakshasima surim chaiva prakritim mohinim shritaha. So moghasha. So here Krishna, the word yomogha. Mogha means waste. Krishna has used the word mogha earlier in 3.16 in the Bhagavad Gita, where he has said, Agha yurindriya ramo mogham partha sajivate. He says, those who do not participate in the cycle of yajna, they live sinfully. Agha yurindriya ramo. They live for sense gratification, they live sinfully, and mogham partha sajivate. They live in vain. Mogham. So in this way, actually it is very unfortunate the way they live. So Krishna is using the word say mogha. Mogha is a waste, useless, failure. So Prabhupada uses the word to a translation here, baffled. And they're frustrated, deluded, defeated. So mogha asha. So Krishna is saying three things over here, the asha, karmana, and jnana. All three of them become mogha. So how does this happen? Mogha asha. So asha here refers to actually their hopes. What kind of hopes they may have? They may be doing the path of karma and they may be desiring to make advancement on that path. They will be frustrated in that and they may be making they may be striving the path of jnana and hoping for advancement of that. But in both cases they will be deluded and bewildered. Why? Because of vichetasaha. Vichetasaha means their consciousness is misdirected. Where is it directed? Misdirected means it is directed away from Krishna towards the things of the, towards some imaginary conception of some higher truth beyond Krishna. So Krishna is right in front of them, but instead of looking at Krishna, they turn away and try to see something beyond Krishna. This is vichetasaha. And Krishna is quite strong in the condemnation of this mentality, where he says, what happens to such people? Rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shritaha. So, prakritim mohinim shritaha. The mohini prakriti, the deluding nature, which is rakshasi and asuri, which is demoniac, they take shelter of that. That means they already have misconceptions, and because of entertaining their misconceptions, whatever they practice, they don't get success in that. On the contrary, they also go deeper into illusion. They fall deeper, greater, they fall into worse suffering, worse entanglement. And what is the entanglement? It's not just karmic bondage. It is actually, they fall into deeper illusion. See, the bondage can come to us in two ways. One is that we just have to take birth again, and we have to exhaust the bad karma that we have done. But other is that we get sinful desires. We become deluded by a deluge of desires. Deluge is a flood. So deluded by a deluge of desires. One after another. And this kind of desires come, and the soul becomes helpless. So it just gets flooded, caught away and carried away by the misconceptions. And the misdirected desires is a result from those misconceptions. So here say, Krishna is saying that what kind of bondage they suffer? That they actually take shelter of that prakriti which is rakshasi and asuri. It's basically demoniac. So Prabhupada translates rakshasi as demoniac, asuri as atheistic. So basically both ways it is anti-theistic, anti-devotional, anti-spiritual. So because of this misunderstanding of Krishna, they all suffer. So now this verse is clearly referring to the Mayavadis. Later on in the 12th chapter, we'll see Arjuna ask a question. And in response to that, Krishna says that, yes, those who worship the impersonal, they will attain me, but the path is klesho diktaras. That he will talk about in 12.5 and 6. Primarily 12.5 he talks about, and Krishna contrasts that in 12.6 and 7 with the path of bhakti, wherein he says that, Chiram partha, pavamina chirat partha, not for a long time, soon they will come back to me. So essentially the point is that Krishna contrasts these two paths. There, the personal path and the impersonal path. But that impersonal path is not offensive to the absolute truth. That impersonal path is Brahmavad. It is just attraction to the absolute truth in the impersonal manifestation. But here, it is not just attraction to the absolute truth in the impersonal manifestation. Along with that, there is a derision. There is a minimization and offense towards the personal aspect of the absolute truth. And that leads to very detrimental results. The people go deeper and deeper into illusion and they suffer thereof. So Prabhupada now quotes some very strong verses here. Yoveti bhautikam deham krishnasya paramatmanaha sa sarva sarva asmad bahishkarya shrauta smartha vidanata mukham tasyavalokyapi sachelam snanam acharet. So what is it saying? Yoveti bhautikam deham. It's very simple actually. So bhautikam deham, the material body. Bhautik is material. Krishnasya paramatmanaha. So that Krishna, who is the Paramatma, is the Supreme Soul, one who thinks, yovetti, those people who think that bhautikam deham, their body is material, then sarva smad bahishkarya. Bahishkar means boycott. Boycott means to not allow, to drive away. So sarva asmad bahishkarya. Such a person should be boycotted, should be exiled, should be driven away from shrauta smarta vidhanataha, that from all activities and activities of the Shruti and the Smriti. And then mukham tasyavalokyapi. So that person should not be allowed to participate in religious rituals. But even by chance we see such a person, then what should one do? Sachelam snanam acharet. So one has to bathe in the Ganges to purify oneself. So now, what is, this may seem a little extreme, that person has some conception of the absolute truth. That person may be, so if that person's conception happens to be different from the conception that the devotees have, is it that this person is so dangerous that the person should be boycotted and the person has to take bath? See, we have to understand the principle over here. The material world is like a diseased place. It's a hospital. And we want to come here to be cured. And different people have different infections. Some person might externally look very healthy, but internally might have a deadly infection. And if another person comes in contact with that person might get a deadly infection. And that infection might be crippling, even killing. So, and fatal. So then, what is it? Now, the ordinary person cannot understand that there is an infection. But a doctor understands, oh, this person got an infection. So many times what is done is, when a person is having an infection, the person is quarantined. Quarantine means he's told to live in a separate room. And whenever the person is given food or anything also, very carefully it is given so that no chance of any infection getting passed from here to there. So a quarantine is required, not because that person is to be hated or derided, but the point is that the person's disease should not spread to others. So just as there can be physical diseases that are materially invisible, that are not visible to our eyes, but those with eyes of knowledge can see, and they will warn us to protect ourselves. And then they may even impose certain things which are extreme. You know, when sometimes some patients have TB, so what happens is, actually if they cough also the germs can come out. So actually even when they talk, they're told to put a mask around their face. And they put a mask around their face and then they talk. So at one time I got severe TB. So one devotee came to meet me, have you become a Jain sadhu now? He said, have you covered your mouth? So you don't know that I got this TB. So anyway, the point is that, you know, for one who does not know, it may seem odd. It may seem extreme also. But for one who knows and understands, it's an infection and one has to be protected from the infection. So, the impersonalists, especially not the Brahmavadis but the Mayavadis, they're very seriously infected by a misconception that kills bhakti. How does it kill bhakti? Because if bhakta and bhagavan are one, then there is no meaning to bhakti ultimately. So bhakti is choked and killed by the Mayavadi misconception. And for that to happen for the soul is the greatest disaster. To some extent, when a person practices material life and gets into too much sense gratification, that also adversely affects the bhakti. But that adverse effect doesn't mask itself as spiritual. One understands that, okay, this is spiritual, this is material, and I have given up spiritual and I turn towards material. That means the person, if a person has a little philosophical understanding, the person will understand. A materialistic person is a diseased person. A spiritual person is a healthy person. So there, materialism is largely like an infection that is visible readily. To the perceptive eye at least. One can understand, okay, this person is, you know, too caught up with wealth, too caught up with sex, too caught up with power, this, that. And this person is infected by material infection. And we will not mistake that person to be a spiritually advanced person or a spiritually healthy person also. But when a person is Mayavadi, externally the person may be quoting verses, may even be wearing saffron, may appear very saintly in some ways, but then internally there is an infection. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful. So the principle here is that there is an infection there and that infection can come to us. And that's why we have to be cautious. Now, if we are going to interact with impersonalists, now today, as we discussed earlier, most people, they have some kind of impersonal conception. But they are not necessarily Mayavadis. They may be under Mayavadi influence. So we don't have to necessarily, if somebody comes, if an old friend who is now, who has some impersonal conception, comes to meet us and he says, Vaishkritya, drive him away. No, we don't have to do like that. We have to be, the principle is that there's an infection and we have to protect ourselves from that infection. So how we may do it will vary according to time, place, circumstance. So, you know, at a cultural level, we can be polite. And Prabhupada also, when you would meet Mayavadis, at a cultural level, he would be polite with them. So at one time, when Prabhupada was sick, a Mayavadi sannyasi who was also in America. Prabhupada had fallen sick in 1968 in America. So Mayavada sannyasi came to meet him, to inquire about it. Prabhupada was very polite. He told his disciples to get up so that he could have a chair. And when that was leaving, Prabhupada himself got up and tried to walk to the door. He said, "No, no, Swamiji, you rest, rest." That Mayavada sannyasi. So he was polite, and Prabhupada was also polite. So now we have to. We have philosophical differences. That doesn't mean that we have to abandon our culture. And the scriptures contain certain statements. Those statements, we should see them as indicating of how grave the misconception is and how serious the disease can be. So we have to learn to be alert and protect ourselves. But at a cultural level, how we deal with will vary according to time, place, circumstances. In general, we should not appear to be uncultured or uncouth. And ultimately, we have to see that even the impersonalists, even the Mayavadis are souls who are ultimately needing the shelter of Krishna. We may not, of course, have the adhikar to try to give Krishna to them. They will give the Mayavad to us. So we may not want to have any philosophical discussion with them. We can be culturally polite, but we don't get intimate with them too much. So this way one can protect oneself. So now, after describing in these two verses, the Mayavad is so quite a strong condemnation of Mayavad. Now Krishna turns towards the Kevala Bhaktas, the pure devotees. Let's look at that. So these are the Krishna is giving here the two extremes. Now, what are understanding what Krishna can be there? So Krishna has given first 9.11 and 12 the best understanding, the most dangerous understanding. It's the most dangerous misunderstanding. And then now Krishna will give the most evolved understanding, the highest understanding. This is what Krishna had done in the 7th chapter also. 7.14 he had said, Maya Durataya, that I am in control of Maya. Then in 7.15 he had said, four kinds of people who don't surrender to him. And then 7.16 he had said, four kinds of people who do surrender to him. So he gave the complete spectrum over there. Similarly, Krishna gives the spectrum over here. Now, here Krishna will go deeper into each of the categories in a different way, where the focus will be more on him and the people's understanding about him. Earlier, the focus was in 7th chapter when the categorization was there. The focus was on the people's own conceptions and their desires. It was not their conceptions about Krishna. No, Moodha, Avajananti, Mam, no. Namam Dushkritino, Moodha, Prapadyante, Naradha, Mamaya, Pratyanasura, Mamashita. No, these are not directly misconceptions about Krishna. They're just misconceptions that they have. Moodha, they think that to work hard for sense gratification is the standard of success in life. Naradhama, they just caught up in sensual and worldly cravings and worldly tidings, and they don't think of anything higher. And Maya Aparita Jnana, they have some knowledge, but they're so proud, they have forgotten the ultimate purpose of knowledge. The purpose of knowledge is spiritual. It's ultimately devotion to surrender to Krishna, but they have forgotten all that. It has been stolen away by Krishna. So, Asuram Bhavamashita. So, there also, it's overall a demoniac mentality, which is anti-religious, anti-spiritual, anti-God. But it is not specifically anti-Krishna. So there in the four categories, both ways, those who surrender, those who don't surrender, and those who surrender, the focus was on the people. And what are the misunderstandings because of which they don't surrender, or what are the understandings with which they surrender, or with which they approach Krishna and eventually surrender. That was talked from 7.16 to 19. But here, when Krishna is talking about a spectrum, the focus is coming more and more on him, so that the glory of bhakti to him can be eventually revealed. So here his focus is on what is people's conception of him. So when you talk about Mayavadis, they have misunderstanding about him as Manushim Tarumashram. So now he's talking about those who take shelter of him and what is their understanding. So Mahatman is Tumam Partha Daivim Prakriti Mashrita Vajantyanan Manaso Yatva Bhuta Vimavayam. So Mahatman is Tumam Partha. So the great soul, the Mahatmas, Daivim Prakritimashitaha. They take shelter of the Daivi Prakriti. And Bhajanti, they worship me, they render service to me. Prabhupada translates all of Bhajanti as under service. We discussed in the purport of 6.47 how the word Bhajanti is more appropriately translated as service. And Bhajanti, how do they Bhajanti? Ananya Manaso. Anya Manaso would mean their mind goes to other things. Ananya Manaso means their mind doesn't go to anyone else, anything else. It fixed in Krishna, in worshipping Krishna. Why? Yatva Bhuta Dimaudayam. They understand that Krishna is Bhuta Adi. He's the Adi, he's the beginning of all existence. He's the origin of all existence. Avyayam, he's imperishable. It's eternal. It is so. This conception, Gyatva Bhuta Dimaudayam, is exactly opposite of Manushim Tanamashritam Parambhava Jananto. That was 9.11. So there they think that actually the Absolute Truth is personal, but temporarily the Absolute Truth has taken a human form. But they do not know the transcendental nature of the Absolute Truth. But here the Mahatmas know. Gyatva. What do they know? They know about him. Maam. Bhuta Dimaudayam. Actually, Krishna is the same word, Bhuta. That's Bhuta Maheshwara. So here Bhuta Adim. So Adi and Avyaya, in the beginning of existence and I am imperishable, this indicates that Krishna is talking about himself in eternal terms, not just in contextual terms. So Krishna is talking about himself as being the origin of all existence and also being inexhaustible. That means Krishna is eternally as Krishna existing forever. And the Mahatmas take shelter of him. So Ananya Manaso in this context also means that they don't think of Brahman. They don't think of other devatas, but they also don't think of some reality beyond Krishna. Ananya Manaso, they fix their themselves only on Krishna. And Krishna uses the word Mahatma to describe them. So we discussed earlier how the Mahatmas, the word was used a few times earlier. In 7.19, Krishna used it to describe those who, after many lifetimes, surrender to him. Bhavanam Janmanamante. And then 8.15 also it was used for those who devote themselves to Krishna. They come back to the spiritual world and they don't return to this material world. Mam pitya punarjanma dukkhale mishashvatam naptuvanti mahatmana samsiddhim paramam gataha. So there also the word Mahatma. So this is the third use of the word Mahatma. Now the word Mahatma today is a social, cultural, political designation. Some national freedom fighters, they were given the title Mahatma. And Prabhupada objected to that because he said that actually these words have certain meanings. And if those meanings are not present, then using them that way is inappropriate. So now, in a conversational sense, if somebody is using the word Mahatma to refer to a particular, say, political leader, now, it's not that we have to do a campaign against that. If we are going for some Independence Day festival, and there we are going to give a talk, and somebody says, okay, so and so leader is the father of the nation. I said, no, you should not use the word Mahatma. No, that may not be the forum for that. There we will be asked to talk something about, say, the spiritual glory of India or whatever. So it's not that we have to make a campaign against this. But we also want to clarify. So when the forum is appropriate, we should clarify. Okay, this word has this particular meaning, and using it in this way is appropriate. Using it this way is not appropriate. So, you know, this sort of, we also have to understand when we are giving a message, what is the central message that we want to give to people? You know, if we go for a program, do you want people to remember, people want to remember as, this person said that you should not call this leader as Mahatma. Is that the message, is that the carry-home message that we want to give to people? No, our carry-home message is that we should chant Hare Krishna, we are not the body of the soul. The soul can be truly happy when the soul serves Krishna. And as people understand this message, they appreciate the coherence, the depth of this message, then they start becoming more and more open. And then when we bring in these kind of points also, then they become more appropriate. They become acceptable to people because they have already developed some level of faith. That way, so Mahatmanastumapat. Now how is the soul? How does soul? Now the soul we know, Kesha Krishita Bhagasya Shitadha Kalpitasya cha. The soul is extremely tiny. Kesha Krishita Bhagasya. It's very, very tiny. And how is such a tiny soul? Why is such a tiny soul called as Mahatma? Why is it called Mahatma? Because actually this soul, I mean in terms of size the soul may be tiny, but this soul has linked with the greatest soul. So Krishna is the greatest soul, and the soul has linked with the greatest soul, and the soul has linked with the greatest soul, and the soul may not have become greater in size, but the soul has become great in power, great in influence. Not by becoming independently powerful or influential, but by connecting with this person who is supremely powerful and supremely influential. So the Anuatma becomes the Mahatma by taking shelter of the Vibhuat. The Anuatma is the Jivatma. The Vibhuatma is the Supreme Lord. Anu and Vibhu are words which are used to contrast the position of the Jiva and Bhagavan. Chaitanya Charitamrita also uses a similar distinct terminology. It says, the Lord is Maya Adhish and the Jiva is Maya Adhin. So like that, the terminology can be Anu. So the Jiva is Anu, the Lord is Vibhu. So the Anuatma becomes the Mahatma when the Anuatma takes shelter of the Vibhuatma. So that is what the word Mahatma refers to, one who has taken shelter. And Daivim Prakriti Maashritaha. Daivim Prakriti Maashritaha. So Daivim Prakriti Maashritaha. What does that refer to? Daivim Prakritim. That means divine nature. Ashritaha. Now the word Ashritaha is significant. This one was before that, the word Ashritaha was used for the people who are demoniac. The people who are having misconceptions about Krishna, they take shelter of the Rakshasi Mahasuri. So you go Prakritim Mohinim Shritaha. So same word Shritaha and here Ashritaha. So as contrasted with those people. So the contrast between the two is clear. Here it is. Daivim Prakritim. So Shritaha is there, but what they are taking shelter of is quite radically different. Here they are taking shelter of Daivim Prakriti. So what is this Daivi Prakriti, divine nature? This actually refers to, is an indirect reference to Radharani. Radharani, the divine nature, you know, there's material nature and there's the spiritual nature. So here, the spiritual nature is being referred to by Daivi Prakriti. Daivi Prakriti means that nature which is intimately connected with Krishna. The word Daivi can be used in various contexts. And depending on the context, it can have different meanings. So earlier the word Daivi has used referred to Maya also. Daivi yesha gunamai mammaya duratteya. So in 7.14 Krishna has said that Daivi yesha gunamai. So what is the meaning over there? Actually the emphasis over there, divine Daivi yesha gunamai mammaya duratteya. So the emphasis over there is, when Krishna is using that word, divine indeed is this potency which is made of the three modes, and it is my potency which is very difficult to scale, very difficult to overcome. But if you surrender to me, you will overcome it. So when Krishna is using the word Daivi over there, the point of using that word is to underscore that even this energy is not independent of me. It is my energy. It is divine in the sense that it is acting under my will. So, it is actually, as Krishna says in the next line, Daivi is used in 7.14a and 7.14b, Krishna is using Mama Maya Duratteya. It's my Maya. It's my illusion. It's my. So, there when the word Daivi is used, it is not used in the sense of internal. There it is used in the sense of that it is connected with me. Normally, we may not see this. We see so many temptations in this world and so many agitations that happen in the mind because of those temptations. So we may not think of those in terms of divine. We may not think of this is having a connection with Krishna. Actually, it is taking me away from Krishna. Yes, it is taking me away from Krishna, no doubt. But the way I will be able to come back to Krishna is by resisting this potency. But this potency is also Krishna's potency. So to resist this potency, I should take shelter of Krishna. So there the use of the word Daivi is primarily to emphasize the point that if we want to overcome this potency, we cannot do it by our own effort. We'll have to take shelter of Krishna. Whereas here the word when Daivi is used, Daivim Prakritim Ashritaha. If we look at the whole context, it's talking about exalted people, Mahatmas. There is no concept of the illusory energy over here. So Daivi Prakriti refers to divine nature. This is the internal potency of the Lord. So when we render devotional service, we come out of the influence of Mahamaya and we come under the influence of Yogamaya. So Yogamaya is that which connects us with Krishna and Mahamaya is that which disconnects us with Krishna. So what do the Mahatmas do? They take shelter of this Daivi Prakriti, this divine nature. So Jiva Goswami, Chakravarti Pad, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they analyze this the concept of Shrimati Radharani, Ladini Shakti, Antaranga Shakti, quite elaborately. So, actually, let's give a summary understanding here. we are all parts of Krishna. So Krishna has this pleasure-giving potency that is called as Ladini Shakti. Now because we are parts of Krishna, we also have our pleasure-giving potency. But because we are Anu, our pleasure-giving potency is also Anu. It's very tiny. And that's why when we try to enjoy separate from Krishna, we can enjoy. But that enjoyment is tiny. It is so limited. It's so limited. That's how it is. In contrast, because Krishna is Vibhu, his Ladini Shakti is also Vibhu. And that's why the happiness that comes by surrender to that Ladini Shakti, the happiness that comes for Krishna through his Ladini Shakti is unlimited. So what is the jiva meant to do? If the jiva tries to enjoy separate from Krishna, you will get at least a little enjoyment, but in the process, the jiva is likely to do bad karma and going to get into karmic entanglement also. So what the jiva is meant to do is connect with Krishna. So the jiva enjoys, by connecting with Krishna, then the Krishna's Ladini Shakti can give infinite happiness. And that infinite happiness, the jiva also gets access to that. And that's how the jiva becomes elevated. That's how the jiva becomes purified and ultimately liberated. So, daivim prakritim ashritah, we take shelter of the divine nature. Now, Prabhupada explains how the jivatma doesn't, how the mahatma doesn't divert any attention to anywhere else. Now, Krishna is talking about those who take shelter of him. So, in this verse, he has talked about their internal characteristics. What are their conceptions? See, how do we know about a person? We know about a person by the actions, and we can't see the conceptions. But when the person talks, and overall how the person lives, that may tell us about the conceptions. But if you want to know about ourselves, you know, we have our inner world, that means our thoughts, and we have our outer world, that is our actions. So when Krishna is describing the Mahatma, in this verse, he is describing their inner world, their conceptions. What is their conception? Yes. Ananyamanaso, vajante ananyamanaso. They are fixed in worshipping Krishna and they don't get deviated from that. Now, these inner characteristics are also reflected in their outer actions. So, what are those outer actions? That will be described in the next verse. So, in general, Prabhupada would use the word devotional service to translate bhakti into English. So, devotion is internal and service is external. And both are together, then that is actually authentic bhakti. So in the previous verse, 9.13, the devotional aspect is talked about. And the 9.14 talks about the service aspect, the external aspect. So the external naturally grows from the internal. Tatam kirtayanto maam itantascha dhrunavrataha namashyantascha maam bhaktya nityayukta upasate. So, what is described? Satatam kirtayantoma. They are constantly glorifying me. Now, yatantascha dudavrataha. Endeavoring with determination. Namashyantas, they offer obeisances to ma. How do they do it? Bhaktya. With bhakti. And nitya yukta. They are constantly engaged. So, actually, the nitya part comes twice here. It comes in the first line where it starts itself with satatam. And then it comes in the last line with the word nitya. And in this way, upasate, they worship me. So this is one of the important verses in the Bhagavad Gita which endorses kirtan. So kirtan is glorification of the Lord. So kirtan can be done in various ways. You can speak Krishna katha, you can chant and dance in kirtans. We can even do japa. All that comes in the broad category of kirtan. It is glorification of the Lord. So, as we discussed earlier, the Bhagavad Gita doesn't go into the details of various spiritual paths. Because for Arjuna, the point is not how to follow a path. The point is which path to follow. So, he's in a culture where the different paths are known. But he's undecided about which path to follow. That's why Krishna doesn't go too much into details of various paths. So, here, these verses like these are explicit references to the path of bhakti. We'll see the 10th chapter also, in the Chatushloki Gita also it will come. Here, Satatam Kirtayanto Mama, very explicit verse, which if somebody asks in the Bhagavad Gita, where in the Bhagavad Gita is chanting of the holy names talked about? So, of course, we'll discuss in the 10th chapter also, Jagyanam Japyagyonsmi, Yes, among the various kinds of sacrifice, I am the sacrifice of doing japa. So that is one verse you can quote, but this is also a very powerful verse. Satatam kirtayantoma. It is talking about the word kirtan clearly, and that also is used with the very strong describer, strong prefix adjective, that is satatam, always glorifying me. This is very similar to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Shikshashtakam, kirtaniya sadahari. So kirtan is there, and same, sada, satatam is there. So these devotees are constantly glorifying Krishna. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to mean that we are just whatever it is, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram Hare, Ram 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 Hare. Now some devotees, they are having a conversation, and in the middle of the conversation only they start chanting. And that, especially if you do that with new people, it can be very irritable. You have to understand that kirtan can be in various ways. You know, if you are discussing something serious with the devotees, and something connected with service of Krishna, something connected with the management of various services, something like that, that is also kirtan. So in the final days of Srila Prabhupada, manifestly in this world, Srila Prabhupada would spend a lot of time with Bhaktisarupa Damodar Maharaj, encouraging him to do scientific preaching. And Prabhupada would very strongly critique scientific misconceptions. So when he would do that, at that time, what would happen when he would do like that? Actually, different people would come with different devotees would come, and at different times they would do kirtans for him. And Bhaktisarupa Damodar would come occasionally, and when he would meet Prabhupada, he would spend a lot of time vigorously talking with him. So at that time, Tamang Krishna, after Prabhupada had been talking quite animatedly with Bhaktisarupa Damodar Maharaj for some time, then Prabhupada said, Tamang Krishna Maharaj said, Tamang Krishna Maharaj was Prabhupada's personal servant in those days, very intimate service he did at that time. So he said, Prabhupada, would you like to have some kirtan now? He thought that Prabhupada is using a lot of his energy, Prabhupada will feel very weak and exhausted. Would you like to have a kirtan? So Prabhupada, what are we doing now? Do you think we are doing illicit sex now? This is also kirtan. So Prabhupada, of course, wanted to drive home the point emphatically that discussions related to the service of Krishna are also kirtan. So, of course, if you are always doing discussing practical things only, okay, we have to do this festival, we have to do this program, we have to distribute these books. If you are only doing management, then although that is also connected with Krishna and there is also kirtan of Krishna, you know, we may not stay conscious that it is called kirtan of Krishna. That's why we also need on a regular basis to hear Krishna Katha that is directly Krishna Katha. That means it can be the philosophy, it can be the pastimes, not connected with management. So we need some time for that also. But even when we are discussing practical things which are related to the service of Krishna, that is also kirtan. And Prabhupada would say that actually the devotees in the Krishna conscious movement, they are constantly trying to serve Krishna in various ways. Satatam kirtayantoma. So we'll discuss about multiple levels at which devotional service can be practiced in the 12th chapter. But the point is that any form of glorification for Krishna is kirtan. And also the arrangement that need to be done so that Krishna can be glorified, that can also be a part of kirtan. Yatantascha dridavrataha. So the devotee endeavors with great determination. Now, okay, if Krishna is talking about a person who is ananya manaso, that person, the mind is not distracted to anything else, then what is the need for dridavrata? You know, for us we need dridavrata because our mind goes here, mind goes there, and we don't feel like serving Krishna. So we have to use our determination. No, I'm going to serve Krishna. Come what may. I'm going to serve. So our mind goes here and there, and we bring it back and we fix it on Krishna. So that is for us. We need dridavrata for that. But why do the exalted devotees who are doing satatam kirtan tumar, why do they need to do yatantasya dridavrata? Why do they have to endeavor determination? Because that is the way love is expressed. Now love means that we want to do wonderful things for the beloved. And we want to do challenging things, things which will please the beloved, and which will involve challenges, which even if they involve challenges. It's not that the lover goes around searching for challenges. Lover focuses on the beloved. He wants to do whatever will please the beloved. And for that, if challenges are involved, the lover will also accept that. So we see Prabhupada endeavored so much. He was working so hard. Sometimes when we say that Prabhupada is empowered, you know, that may blind us to the fact that Prabhupada had to struggle a lot. And one of the secrets of Srila Prabhupada's success was that he was a tirelessly hard worker. Sleep for just a few hours at night. and all day vigorously sharing Krishna consciousness with others. So, if you want to do anything in the material world, anything wonderful, even if it is for Krishna's sake, that doesn't mean that this world will offer us a bed of roses. We'll be able to do it easily. Yes, Krishna is ultimately my adhyakshina bhakti, in charge of this world, but this world is also filled with people who are inimical to Krishna. And therefore, even in service to Krishna, there will be obstacles. So, for even the pure devotees, the advanced devotees, they need determination. Itantashya dhrudhavrataha. Because there are so many obstacles, there are so many occasions when Prabhupada could just have given up everything. And said, Prabhupada even said that, when in the early days when he was preaching, he would go to the Boston, he would go to the pyre and see, okay, from here I can take a ship and go back to India. Now if Prabhupada had gone back like that at that time, you know, we would have stayed on in sensual life, sinful life, ignorant of Krishna. So we are all eternally grateful to Prabhupada that he was dhrudhavrataha, tantasya dhrudhavrataha. Similarly, we also have our obstacles in our spiritual life. We also have to be dhrudhavrataha. And actually, it's significant that to the extent we do kirtan enthusiastically, to that extent we'll have dhrudhavrataha. Because the kirtan will give us a higher taste. It will give us the experience of the reality and the beauty of Krishna consciousness. And that will inspire. Whatever obstacles are there, you know, they're temporary. And the soul and I want to attain the spiritual level of consciousness. Let me endeavor. So, the kirtan will enable us to dhrudhavrataha. And then namashyantascha mam bhaktya. These people, they offer obeisances. So Krishna is describing basically different forms of devotional service. So kirtanta is there, namashyanta. Namashyanta can be vandanam. So namashyantascha mam bhaktya. So among the nine limbs of devotional service, Krishna is describing. The word cha also comes, which indicates that there are other forms of devotional service. In this way, nitya yukta upasate. The previous verse is ananyamana. So externally the mind is not deviated, and internally the mind is not deviated, and externally one is constantly engaged. So the tam nitya. And Prabhupada talks about how a person is constantly engaged and doing his activities right from morning to night. And in this way, the devotee keeps advancing steadily. So Krishna has described here from verses 9.11 to 14. 11, 12, he describes those who defy, misunderstand him and take shelter of the demoniac nature. And then those who take up the shelter of the divine nature. And with internal focus only on Krishna, they are externally engaged, constantly in the service of Krishna. After talking about these two spectrum, there are a number of people who lie in between these two extremes. Krishna will talk about them in the next verse. We'll continue that in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.